Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, 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 we're back, we're brown. Hey, Mandra.
Hey, Tiff, how's it going?
It's going excelente, actually. Well, I mean, I don't know, I'm in a good mood even though, like, you know, everything's falling down. But, you know, hey, I mean, I'm alive.
You did the whole, don't tell the universe it's going good.
Yeah, I know. No, I don't know, I am in a good mood. Maybe today, I had a good nap today. So when I've got a good nap day, you know, I feel like I could take on the world. And, oh, I found a tub.
Oh, well, it's the little things, isn't it?
It is. Because it's hard because, you know, Superman is 6'6", so my plumbing starts soon. And my contractor's like, you really need to find a tub. But I didn't want a tub that was going to, like, because our bathroom is a good size, but it's not a huge bathroom. Mm-hmm. But I wanted a standalone tub and to find one that could fit him, but not also, like, dwarf the bathroom. So we found one, and it's really great. And people tell you to stay away from acrylic because acrylic cracks, and there's just so many things to learn. So we got a stone resin tub. Have you heard of those?
I did not choose our tub. But yikes. I do know about, like, there's different floor materials. I don't know. I woke up in a cold sweat. This is what happens. I woke up in a cold sweat and I was like, oh, our bathroom floor tile is too slippery. We're going to break an elbow. Like, we're going to slip. We're going to break an elbow. It's going to be a whole thing. It's like my fear is falling into, like, slipping in the bathroom, you know? And I'm like, it's too slippery and it's too late because it's been delivered. I mean, I got over it. But I'm definitely at the stage where you make all these decisions. But the thing is, a project takes so long and you have so much time to, like, second guess yourself, which is,
I know.
It's killing me. I'm like, wait, did we choose the right shower tile? Like, do we really need two windows there? But they're already put in the walls. Like, it's,
I know. It is very, very nerve wracking because it's definitely, like, especially when it comes down to doing, like, the big things, like, because framing is pretty easy because literally you could be like, you know what, I changed my mind, I want it to be a little bit bigger, and they could take down the wood and put it back up. But, like, plumbing and electric, it's like, we're here now.
Yeah, they're starting to patch up walls now, so it's getting real serious. We haven't had too many, like, oh God, we found this and now it's going to cost, you know, so much more money to fix it. We haven't really had any of those experiences, but we have a deck that we are expanding, and I noticed there was this big patch that I was seeing because you could see the bottom of the deck through our kitchen ceiling now. And I noticed this big patch of, like, dark rotted wood. And I was like, oh, snap, what is that? And it turned out to be a leak, and it's going to cost us $1,500 extra just to patch mm-hmm. this little, like, 2-foot by 2-foot section of our deck, which sucks. But honestly, I mean, still knock on wood because anything could happen. But we'll have to dip into our contingency fund for that, which makes me kind of – I feel like we started dipping into our contingency fund for things that weren't quite contingencies, but more like, I really would like a center light fixture. Let's add that to the electrical plan.
I know exactly what you mean. But, like, we've had, like, contingency fund things where I'm like, So we're definitely using – we probably use about half our contingency fund already. I'm just like – I'm hoping because everything's open. So I'm like, well, we should be good now, right? Because we've already seen everything. And then at one point the boiler wasn't working, but now it is. So I think we're rocking and rolling. My sister's already like, so can I move in? I'm like, we're not even finished renovating it, and you already want to take the spare bedroom. She's like, I want to work on my dreams.
Oh, man.
So looks like we already have a roommate. But yeah, but things are going good. Other than that, how's life? What'd you do this weekend?
Oh, you know, picked up some toilets, normal stuff. Got a little, I made some decisions around holiday spending. I think we're gonna do, we're definitely not doing gifts for each other, but I think my siblings and I, since we're not gonna be together this holiday season, I think we're gonna end up doing the whole Secret Santa thing again and just sending each other a gift. 'Cause I could pull the whole, I'm doing a home renovation. I don't have money for that thing, but I did just spend $50 on a toilet paper holder, so maybe I can afford to give my sister a little Christmas
How much
present.
on a toilet paper holder?
$50. I don't know.
Okay.
It slipped through. I don't know how it happened, but there was a long list of things, and I just said, okay, it slipped through. But if you think
It's so
about how
funny
many
'cause
times
you
you'll use it, I
can
mean.
be when you're like renovating, so many things go out the window. I guess it's like planning a wedding where you're like, I would never spend that amount of money. And then it happens. And you're like, but I mean, don't we all need a $2,500 tub? And I was like, what am I doing with life? But anyway, but no, this past weekend I did the Texas Women's Conference.
Oh, okay.
So
What is
yeah,
that?
that was well, there's a women's conference. I think it like floats around the country. I think it goes to like five different locations and they're pretty big. So the one in Texas, it's the biggest women's conference in Texas. It was 7,900 women. And Dr. Brené Brown, who I love, was there. And then also Reese Witherspoon, they were both keynotes. So I did a breakout session, just like seven ways to live a richer life, just the basics like budgeting, credit, whatever. But there were just so many women. Honestly, it was really awesome. The energy was awesome. Usually, I'm not really like someone who like loves conferences because sometimes they don't seem so useful, you know? But I have to say, this is my second women's conference. Like with, it's literally called like the women's conference. So I think the last one I did was in Pennsylvania, I think. But I like them because they really insist that you give actionable steps. So you really leave feeling like, oh, I took this, you know, breakout session or whatever, and I left with some actionable items and steps to do. So like I said, I have to say it was a really good weekend. And I got to meet this woman named Jessica. I'm gonna mess up her last name, but she like changed my life. So she was just telling me about a business she owned. This is how you just never know about folks. She was telling me about a business she owned that she started. It's a social enterprise, and for those of you who don't know, a social enterprise is a business that really it's Honegger, that's her last name. It's a business that the purpose comes before the profit. So, you know, of course you want to make money, but really there's like you know, like a the mission is really purpose driven versus profit driven. And she started this have you ever heard of Noonday Collection?
No, I haven't.
So she like buys jewelry from what she calls vulnerable populations. So populations where folks really don't have access to the market, but they're artisans and they make beautiful things. And she started it as a fundraiser because she wanted to adopt a little boy from Rwanda, her and her husband. Then the recession hit and they were in real estate. They lost everything. So they purchased some, I think, some jewelry from his village, or I think she purchased it from Uganda, and she sold it to her friends and to say, "Hey, I'm doing this fundraiser so we can, you know, bring my son home." And then it started to do really well. And then her friends were like, "Hey, I want to sell jewelry and help people in other countries, but also make money too." And I was like, "Oh, wow, that's really nice." And then she was telling me how they grossed $18 million this year or last year, and I was like, "Wait, what?" And so it just was a really, speaking with her was a really great reminder of how, like, you know, you can do good work, help good people, and make good money. So that was just like the most inspirational. I just happened to be sitting next to her, and she was just sharing that she's also the fastest growing privately held company in direct sales. And so I just thought, wow, it was just such a great example that, you know, because that's what I'm wanting to do. I'm wanting to make sure that we run a company that is integrity above all else, people and purpose above profit. But it doesn't mean you don't want to make profit. So just to see that she was navigating that successfully was really inspirational.
How do you feel about, I mean, I know that you speak at conferences and stuff, but I wonder, like our listeners, are there conferences that you guys attend, like as attendees, like outside of stuff that you might do for work? 'Cause I just got an invite to like the World Business Forum in New York City, which is meant to be for business leaders to come together, and then you hear from people like Seth Godin and Arianna Huffington, and it's focused, it's less of like this will help me as an editor and more this will help me, you know, like as a leader. And some of these tickets are really expensive. Like I'm getting Because I'm with the media, I could, get a comp ticket or whatever. But like, if you're out there and you're listening and you guys, like, you purchase tickets for conferences, I just wonder, like, what are your favorite ones? What ones have really helped you that you would go to, on an annual basis? Maybe it's Essence Fest or I don't know. I went to one that was hosted by Mika Brzezinski, like from that show on MSNBC. Why can't I think of it right now? The Know Your Worth tour. Did you speak at that tour?
Yes, I
Okay.
did when it first
See,
came out. Yep.
you make the rounds. But like, there were so many women at that conference. I remember Elizabeth Warren spoke. She was one of the keynotes at that
Yes.
conference, and like the crowd was crazy. And I'm just thinking, like, who are these women who aren't getting free tickets, who are actually spending money to go to these conferences? Yeah, and I don't know. I'm curious if you guys email us at brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com,
Dot com.
dot com, if you have a conference that you like or anything to say about conferences that have helped you or in your business or personal life. I'm just curious.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, I wonder if you were at that same one because I was there when Elizabeth Warren spoke. So I'm like, I wonder if we were in the same room.
I think we were. I covered it because I was at Yahoo Finance then. I was a reporter and I was doing a story on Mika's new book, Know Your Value. And then
Yes.
she like launched it into a mini tour. So I was there. I interviewed Hoda and I interviewed
Yes, I was there. That's so crazy
Brooke
that we were in the same
Shields.
room.
Yeah, I
Yes, I remember.
interviewed Andre Leon Talley, who was really sweaty and hot and very
See, that's the
tall.
shade. He is very, very, very
Yeah,
tall.
that is the visceral memory I have of that interview. But
No, that's awesome. So yeah, because there are definitely some conferences where you're like, why did I come?
oh yeah, spill the tea on the ones that you didn't think were worth your time. It's also like the end of your time, and I know I'm about to like deadlines are if you're if like leadership institutes or trainings out there, a lot of their deadlines are in the fall. I have to submit an application for a I'm trying to do last year I did a leadership institute for young or diverse, I think it was diverse editorial leaders at the Poynter Institute, and I'm going to apply for another program that's focused on women, but same similar thing, women leaders in journalism, and it's through the Online News Association. It's like a 1 week accelerator program, and I'm going to try to keep doing at least one of these a year. And if your company, would reimburse you for something like that, then see what deadlines are out there. If there's anything that interests you for 2019, because some of them have deadlines now. That's the only thing to
Yeah.
consider.
I feel like extended learning is always, it's always a good thing. So if you can, if you can sign up for something where you're actually going to take something away, I always think to myself, like, it's less to me about like the woman on the stage or the man on the stage or whoever. And I really try to make it my business to connect with the person sitting next to me because you never know. Like, look at Jessica Hart. I'm gonna say her name wrong, but like, look who I met. That wasn't. She just was sitting next to me. Honegger. Sorry, Jessica, but like,
What?
Honegger. Honegger. Honegger.
I'm all that.
You just gonna leave me out here to dry. So like, I just think that I think sometimes a lot of times when people go to conferences, they think like, or they're wanting to connect with the person that's speaking, which is obviously, dope. But sometimes the people who are sitting next to you are like way doper and just turning to the left or to the right and asking questions and connecting. So yeah, I'm not a huge conference fan only because sitting sometimes, unless like the speaker is really dynamic, I get like bored easily. But when it's a really good speaker and I get some actionable things to do, then I'm all for it.
Cool. What else is
Yes.
happening in the world? California's burning. Trump is tweeting.
Yes, but assuming, we do have the house, so there is that.
But is that your response to California's burning? I got a
No,
house.
I didn't mean the house. I meant like the Democrats got the house.
Oh.
I was like, no, I would never say that. Wow, Mandy. Is that
I
what you
thought
think
that
of?
was off personality. I mean,
You're like,
off brand for
oh,
you, off brand.
no. I meant that, like, that politically, there's some
Yeah.
political change happening.
I have been on like tenterhooks. Ooh, I've never used that in a sentence. Tenterhooks. I'm so, that's a good word. Because what's happening in Georgia right now with the, I think last week even on the show we talked about the election results, but at Stacey Abrams and Brian Kemp, there's still not a declared winner. Like it's cor like a week later, there's not a declared winner, and they're recounting every single vote. And I'm just like, and it's nail biting right now.
Sometimes, you know, I plug in and I see what's going on with the world. And other times I'm like, you know what? I got to plug out. I can't do it. But no, I mean, definitely this, the midterm election, what it did make me excited for was to see just how many people participated. It felt like we were voting for president. Like, I'd never seen that many people out for midterm. So that's always a good thing.
Did you see that Starbucks is laying off 5% of its workforce?
No, why?
I don't know. I guess business is not booming. But
are millennials killing coffee too? Because, you know, they blame y'all for everything.
Yeah, I read a story this week that millennials are killing the pet food industry because they're shopping for fancy dog food and the bad, like the cheap stuff that like my cat ate when she, not dogs, but pets in general. The cheap stuff, like, what did my cat eat? Like Purina or like Kibbles and Bits or whatever. Like, millennials are spending twice as much as they were on dog food, like the organic, you know.
Really?
Yeah, like just spending so much money now that the ones who make the cheap stuff aren't doing so good.
Which seems so weird because it's like, at the same time, they're like, millennials are broke. You know, they tell you guys everything but a child of God.
Listen, when it comes to pets, people are just not, it's nonsensical.
Yes. Somebody posted in my, on Facebook, you know, I have the Dreamcatcher group. And somebody posted, you know, I'm really struggling with my finances. I'm really thinking about giving up my dog, like, either giving it to a friend or whatever. People were livid. I couldn't believe it. I had to turn off the comments. They were like, would you give your child to your friend? And I'm like,
no, because said, that's a human.
I know. And it wasn't like, she wasn't saying like, I'm going to leave my dog outside, you know, and walk away. She was just like, you know, you could tell. She's like, I love my dog, but it's to the point where I can't afford my life. And I'm trying to figure out what do I do? You know, what do you guys think? And so I just was just reminding folks, you know, to keep it kind. But, you know, I mean, yeah, I had to turn off the comments because people were really angry.
Oh my
like
God.
How dare you even consider like leaving your dog who was clearly a human with your friend or, you know, or whatever that would hurt you. Like I said, it wasn't like she was going to euthanize her dog. She just was like, I just can't afford. And someone was like, well, be homeless with your dog. I'm like, you know what? Block, crazy lady. So I just thought like, you know, people are very, very, very attached to their animals. I don't have any animals. I had them as a kid.
I do in my dreams.
I don't want a dog.
I dog nap in my imagination all the time. I'm like, I'm gonna steal that dog. I haven't though.
No,
personally
I just feel
done
like
it.
So many dogs are so stinky. Sorry, people with dogs. I'm sorry. I'm half my friends with dogs. I'm like, ugh, I know you have a dog. You know, I have a dog.
I don't want to fight with you right now. It's the holidays almost. Let's not start talking trash about dogs who are just God's gift to the world.
I mean, I can live with the, you know, cats. I could deal, you know, but I mean, and honestly, I actually like dogs, but let's not pretend like they don't come with a little bit of odor.
I mean, some of them more than others is true. Everyone loves corgis. They stink and they shed like a mother. I need to know though from our listeners, another question for the listeners, email us and tell us what is like an embarrassing amount of money you spent on your pet. I know people out there who've gone to debt for their pets. They take out these credit cards to pay for their pet at the veterinarian and end up paying those cards off for years. No joke. So this is a safe space. You can be anonymous. I want to know your pet. I want to know how much you spent on your pet and what crazy things you've purchased for them. BrownAmbitionPodcast@gmail.com. Hey, BA fam. This episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
All right. Are we going to take some questions?
I do. I have a question from an anonymous listener who is torn between two job offers. First of all, what a nice place to be. Foremost.
Yeah, okay. That is a nice place.
But she can't decide which is the right opportunity. So let's hear from her. She says, I'm currently evaluating two job offers. One is very exciting. It's with a company that I'm not sure about, though. They specialize in debt collection. The role would be in corporate philanthropy, though, which is a dream job for me. However, I don't feel that working for a debt collection company reflects my values. Is there anything redeeming about the debt collection industry? I think I already know the answer to this question. The other job is with a more reputable company, but it seems a bit boring, and everyone is much older than me. My husband's encouraging me to take this job because the benefits are better and he wants me to be sensible. It's hard to talk to him about finding a job I love because he's too practical. He's a work at the boring job for 30 years kind of guy. I'd love some advice. Dot, 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 dot. So what should you do? Work for the shadier company that's the perfect job for her, or the more sensible company that could be boring but has good benefits?
So how is the debt collection company the perfect job again?
It's in corporate philanthropy, which she says is a dream job for her. If the company has a philanthropic arm, maybe they're not. I mean, she doesn't give us a name of the company at all. But I mean, not all. Yes, many, a lot of debt collection, firms get a bad rap. But it's a reality in this country that we have a debt-based economy, not a debt-based economy, but a lot of people use debt. And some people can't pay it back. So we need to have institutions that can get it back. Some institutions are really shady about it and they break the law and they do things that are, that aren't kosher, like harassing people. But some companies are just doing what they need to do. You know, they're hired to recoup debts and they're not all shady. The fact that this one has a foundation of some kind, maybe they're one of the less shady ones. So I wonder how much research she's put into the company itself before deciding that, like, painting with a broad brush, that it deals with debt collection, so it must be, a terrible place.
Yeah. So I honestly, so she's not actually going to be doing the debt collecting. It would just be in the philanthropy.
Exactly.
Honestly, that is hard because that whole debt collecting part. I mean, and honestly, I would look. I mean, I'm assuming you looked on Glassdoor. If you haven't, you should. That's where you can kind of see what it's like, what employees say about working, and take it with a grain of salt, but still,
True. It's a good idea.
I mean, just because it's debt collection doesn't necessarily mean they're shady, like Mandy said. And especially if you're working in a department where it's in alignment with what you want to do with your life, you might have a 1-year plan there. Like, I'm going to work in the philanthropy department here and then move on to another philanthropy department in a company that I feel even more comfortable with. Because you have to think, my sister would always tell me when you're going from job to job, that it's a building block, that's what you have to think about it as. And so if I'm assuming you have a foundation already, so if this is a block that you're building, if this is like a layer of brick that you're building on the eventual house of your ideal job and career and whatever, does this add to that foundation? Because it sounds like the boring company doesn't. Like, it's not bringing you closer to where you eventually want to be. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So normally I'd be like, debt collection. I have to cross fingers up. no, don't do it. But it sounds like that the actual job itself is in alignment. So maybe I would focus on that.
Personally, as a hiring manager, I've probably reviewed hundreds of resumes over the last 3 months because I've been hiring 8 or 9 positions. And when I'm looking at resumes, this is my personal, this is how I personally do it. I know how every hiring manager in industry is different. I'm looking for job title, length of employment. And sometimes I do focus on the employer, especially if it's a similar company. It's nice for me to know that, you have worked for a company that I recognize because I have a sense that you would at least fit in with our type of structure. But job title is important too. And like Tiff said, if this is the career that you want to work in corporate philanthropy, then I, as a hiring manager, I would just see, she's got 18 months or 3 years of experience with a corporate philanthropy team. And I would weigh that a little bit more heavily versus the company itself, with the caveat that if it's one of these companies that I would recognize and I would know, that's a shady, I saw a story about that in the news and it's shady AF, it might taint my judgment of you a little bit. So do some research, hop on Google, see if this debt collection company has been in the news, if there's been a ton of lawsuits filed by consumers who have claimed that it's been harassing them. Because at the end of the day, you do want to work for a company that you believe in, and that makes you feel good about yourself. And if you're finding that there's a ton of red flags out there, then even though it's the right fit, you know, on paper, maybe it wouldn't be happy. Maybe you wouldn't be happy there in the long run because you wouldn't feel proud to say you work there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I, like I said, I can understand like feeling that way, but at the same time, the other place doesn't sound like it serves you at all, you know? So my assumption is if your husband likely has the good insurance enough for the both of you, if he's the type to work at the boring job for the good insurance. So, you know, sometimes, you know, having one person in the family with the insurance job is enough. You get to fly if you're able. You know, everyone doesn't have that opportunity. So take it, girl. With the mindset of like, this might not be my last stop. I'm going to look to expand beyond this, but I'm leaving here with the experience to be able to move to the next space.
Absolutely. And even though the people at your new at this other job may seem, oh, they're older than me and maybe they won't be as fun, but think about what their experience could do for you, what you could learn from them. And also, I've been in jobs where it's fun to be at a young company where everyone's around the same age and has the same, you know, beliefs and the same points of view and hangs out at the same bars. But after a while, you're like, is there a grown-up in this piece? Like, can we get some direction? It's nice to have people with different levels of experience. So it may not be totally negative that you're working with more seasoned people, even if it seems maybe like not the best fit for you because you might feel like on the younger side. Everyone loves the young kid. Come on.
I do. They'll bring you food.
That is too true. Shout out to Fran at Reader's Digest, who was my first boss, who used to bring this giant sandwich for us all to share from his deli. Oh, I just had a flashback.
Because they always think that the young person doesn't have any money for food, even though you're like, but I work here with you.
Well, thanks for your question. Good luck. Okay, found the next question. So this comes from listener, I guess she wants to be anonymous. I'm not seeing a name here. She wants to know, on our last episode last week, we talked about some of our favorite credit cards. I gushed about the credit card I'm using for my home renovation, the City Double Cash card, because it gives you, this is something that I wanted to clarify. I said it gives you 2 points back on your spending, but it's 1 point when you purchase it and 1 point when you pay. So as long as you pay off your expenses that you charge to the card, you do get the 2 points back. But I wanted to clarify that because I forgot that was the caveat. Anyhow, sometimes there's so many credit card options. So this listener wants to know if she should use creditcards.com to search for the best credit card. She says, I currently have a Bank of America credit card with a $500 limit, and I'm looking for a higher credit limit. I requested a credit increase from Bank of America, and it was denied. So which credit card website should I use to find a card that gives me a higher limit?
Well, one, did they say why they denied you?
Do they ever do that when you get denied for a credit card? Do they say, I don't think they do.
No, I mean, sometimes you can ask, but yeah. I mean, I'm just wondering, is it because your credit score is not where it ought to be? Is it because of your income? Because typically, right, they ask you, the questions they ask you when you're asking for a limit, they want to know like what your income is. Mm. Because they want to know, obviously, can you pay it back? So
they need a reason to raise your limit. Out of the blue.
Exactly. And if are you using your card in a way that would reflect you needing a higher limit? You can always apply for another card someplace else and, you know, potentially get another limit, but then you're going to get the inquiries. So you have to ask yourself, is it worth losing a few points temporarily to open up another card?
Knowing that she has a B of A card with a limit of just $500, I feel like we're talking to someone who's like a beginner.
Yes.
Someone who doesn't have a long history of credit. And it could be that you got denied because your credit history is not long enough, or you've missed payments in the past, or maybe they don't see any change in your income or your credit score to justify increasing your limit.
It might be best. I mean, I know that you already have a credit card. I mean, you could look into potentially, you know, getting a secured card to give yourself a little extra boost, because they tend to, right after you do write by a secured card, after 6 months to a year. So like Superman, when he got his secured card, it was 500. And then like after like 6 or 8 months, something like that, he paid it off every month and was doing right by it. So then they brought him up to like 1,000 and 1,500. So I don't know how much you're looking for, but you're likely not going to get to like, you know, $3,000 from 500 right away, because you're at 500 for a reason. So you might look into, like I said, getting a secured card and working it that way. to me, the best secured cards are the ones that are given during banks, like from a bank, like because then the bank will make the secured card unsecured once you've used it properly, and you don't have to like apply for another card, or yeah. you just be, you know, just be patient. Like
my guess is that if she's looking for a card with a higher limit, she's trying to spend more than $500, and with secured cards, you put money up front and then you kind yeah. of pay yourself back over the year. So if she's wanting extra room, you have to ask yourself that too. Like, why do you want a higher credit limit? Is it so you can charge something that you can't afford to pay off right away? And if that's the case, maybe it's better that you can't get one because, you know, when you carry a balance like that, it ends up being really expensive over time. You don't mention what your credit score is. And if you know your credit score, that can give you a sense of what types of credit cards you can qualify for. It might even answer the question of why you might have been denied for a credit card increase. But there are credit cards that are more suited, that are more willing to work with people with poor credit, you know, average credit or excellent credit. Some credit cards, you know, you have to have excellent credit. They never would qualify you if you didn't. So check your credit score. And in terms of finding a card for you, creditcards.com actually has a really cool tool called Card Match, which I love, and I have no problem, calling them out, shouting them out for that tool because it's awesome. You put in a couple of details and they kind of match you with the card that can be a fit for you. So if you know your credit score, I assume they ask that. They can probably give you a sense of options for you. Just be careful applying for new credit, like Tiff said, because mm-hmm. you will get dinged for it on your credit score. Earlier, Tiff, you kind of hinted at this, like, are you using the card in a way that they'd want to raise your limit? And by that, do you mean like this happened to me? You know, I had a really low limit card too, but I kept maxing it out, but then paying it off in full each month. And then they were like, oh, here you go, girl. And gave me more wiggle room.
I was going to say that because ultimately they're like, let's just say you have a $500 card and you're swiping $10 a month on it and paying it off in full. They're like, well, what do you need a higher limit for? You don't use it anyway. So not that you have to max it out, but using it, you know, like the key is to pay it off every month, obviously, because you don't want to carry that balance and pay that interest. But if you're not using it consistently in a way that would make them say, hey, more of a limit makes sense. And sometimes that's not necessarily true. Like, for example, I've got a card that I never use. And they keep bumping me up. So like I'm at $30,000 now. And I tell you, I hardly ever use that card. And it's a Bank of America card. But also too, sometimes cards will judge you on the usage of like other things that you're doing. So I've got as my credit score raises, Bank of America was continuously increasing my credit limit. So even though I wasn't really using my card, my credit score was raising. And it was reflected in that, just like if my credit score declined, Bank of America actually lowered my because they're able to do so, lowered my mm-hmm. my card limit. And so just be mindful of that. It all comes down to credit score and usage, if you ask me.
And if what you're wanting to do is make a purchase that's higher than $500 that you know you want to carry on the card, if your credit score is good, I mean, again, check your credit score. There's a bunch of free tools out there. Your Discover Scorecard is a good one. If you're looking to make a purchase and you want time to pay it off, maybe that Bank of America card, if it charges interest, which I'm assuming it is, maybe if you have good credit, excellent credit, you may be able to qualify for a card with a 0% intro APR for purchases, which, you know, you can make a purchase with and then pay it off without having those interest charges up front. That's an option, maybe a better option if what you're looking for is just, you know, a more wiggle room so you can make a big purchase and pay it off over time. But of course, just make sure you pay it off before the promo period ends. I always feel like I'm just one asterisk after the next. But credit cards are an awesome tool when you use them wisely. Probably. I just like always get nervous talking about them because I'm like, please don't get into credit card debt around the holidays. It sucks. I know.
It's time for breaking a boost. Are you ready to break or boost?
I was born ready.
Do you want to go first? Brown break or boost?
I'll do first because if you're going to be positive, mine's going to be a little neggy.
I don't know. You know what? I'm going to lean toward positive. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I'll let you go first.
Okay. Ooh, mystery. So I just wanted to share a stat. Actually, we had someone from my company in the office last week, someone from the executive level, and we had a really interesting, candid conversation around the lack of women in leadership at our company. And this is like a known thing at the company. And it was great to hear him actually acknowledging it. And he's not the first person I've heard acknowledge it. Clearly, they've been talked to by somebody. And I just got an interesting, just some statistics around women who actually hold board seats and leadership seats in corporate America that I wanted to share because it's really, really depressing. And while I feel like we've made big gains, at least in representation among employees at some companies, it's still really difficult. And this just shows how difficult it can be to actually get to the highest levels of leadership. So this is a report by an organization called The Rising Tides. They found that only 4.32% of board seats and 4.07% of leadership seats are held by non-white women. They analyzed the composition of boards of directors and executive leadership teams at, again, Fortune 50 companies. They were scored on the placement of women, women of color, and people of color on their boards of directors and leadership teams. And this stat just really broke my little heart. And it also just made me, just was really sobering to think that just 4% of, and we're talking like board seats and executive leadership. I mean, these are the real decision makers in companies. And the fact that there's so little progress in diversifying at the highest levels at these major companies is, you know, I don't think we are like super surprised, but it is just 4%.
That's yeah, it is. Yeah. And that's why, I mean, the work that you do with running your team and the work that I do with running a business, that's why it's so critical to one, be an example of what's possible, but two, to also bring women on board, you know?
I hope that more companies, you know, in Silicon Valley, there was a big movement around publishing your diversity statistics. And we saw like Facebook and Google and Apple, I think they all have published their diversity stats and they were even worse. Maybe I'm thinking of the wrong stat, but some of these companies, like diversity was so, so low, but by publishing it, by forcing each other to publish it, it's like you can't ignore the problem. And I feel like that's the issue. It's like you, especially at a company, working for companies as I have that have hundreds of employees, it's hard for you to know just what the diversity makeup is because you don't see everybody, you know, on a continuous basis. So some companies are making moves to improve that, but, you know, you're right. I mean, we're sort of in small ways trying to fix that, but I'm, you know, I can only do what I can do and vice versa. At a certain point, you have to look to like the people at this level who are largely white, they need to realize it and get on board. You know, we can't do it ourselves for working from the ground up. You know, what we need is change from the top down.
Yeah. To meet someplace in the middle. I agree.
Exactly.
I agree. Well, I just have just a quick little boost. I thought this was interesting. Forbes reported that 58% of women elected to Congress during our last midterm elections were Girl Scouts. How interesting is that?
Oh, that's cute. You I was know, a Girl Scout I know, for a hot
I
minute.
I know. And it just basically says that, like, you know, basically, you know, Girl Scouts clearly, they, you know, they create leaders. And I just thought that that was really beautiful. So if you've ever thought about putting your girl in Girl Scouts and you think it might be in alignment, just know that, you know, leadership is a clear tenet of being a Girl Scout. And I just thought that that was, you know, that was really cute, right?
Yeah. Shout out to Girl Scouts. I mean, wasn't it a record number of women elected to the House this year? Yes. Maybe it was House. I think, yeah, House or Senate, one of them. Like dozens of women won seats across the country. And that is That's a huge turning point, like the women wave, they're calling it.
And then you saw like in Texas, I think it was like 19 judge seats were up for election and 19 women won them. I just thought that was awesome.
Oh, that's amazing.
So there's definitely strides. I mean, you can only ripple, you know, from where you are. Everyone's not going to be on the world stage, but if you ripple out where you are, you'd be surprised how far it can go. So there's hope yet.
And also get your kids in Girl Scouts, like stat?
Maybe so. I mean, we couldn't afford Girl Scouts. My mom was like, yeah, no, but sounds cute. But I mean,
I had to drop out. My mom never told me.
She was like, yeah, girl, we don't have it anymore. we just never, I never joined, even though I wanted to. I wanted to do brownies. Remember brownies?
I was a brownie for like a year, I think, in the first grade, and then never again.
Oh, you know, well, so that's
I sold my cookies.
That's my little end of the podcast little boost. Oh, and our first lady, our forever first lady, her book dropped.
I was like, I need to go because I have the audiobook waiting for me and I can't wait. It's 19 hours long. I did the math. Yes. It'll take me like 2 weeks to get through it, but I really just needed to hear her voice. So I got the audiobook version.
And do you see, I was just so happy that I did not know this, that she too had a hard time getting pregnant and had both her daughters via IVF.
I did see that. I tried to avoid spoilers, but I saw that headline.
Yeah. So I just thought that was really, I was honestly really encouraged by that. Cause I said, wow, that was like, I'm glad that she shared it. And she was just like, you know, as women, sometimes you just feel like if your body doesn't do what you feel like it should naturally do, that you've done something wrong. So it was just nice to see that, like, wow, both of her daughters. And so I'm like, yay. If I start my first cycle, hopefully soon, within a month. So a cycle is just like when they take the egg and they take sperm, they put it together and they hopefully something happens. And so I could be pregnant within a month. I could not. Who knows? So send me your baby dust. You guys have already been doing so.
Baby dust.
I was going to say, send me baby juices. I was like, oh, wait, that doesn't
sound good. Baby dust, baby juices.
You know what I mean.
Good vibes only.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a PS to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the PS first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.